So I apologize, but you know, we just got off on a tangent and we were talking about a lot of things. I don't think we're going to be able to get through all your cases, but let's do one HER2 positive case just so we can at least touch into that briefly. And you have this 48-year-old lady with metastatic disease. And I rather than go through the whole case, I just want to touch on a couple of points about her case that kind of reflect a lot of questions that we get from oncologists in practice. So the first question I have is she presented in 2012, so it was a few years ago, and she got neoadjuvant therapy. And at that point, she just got trastuzumab with the neoadjuvant chemotherapy, and she got trastuzumab post-op as adjuvant therapy. But I just wanted to ask you, because it really is one of the most common questions we get from oncologists. Nowadays, a patient like that, I think for sure, would have gotten pertuzumab as part of neoadjuvant therapy. And she, unfortunately, had significant residual disease. But I'm just kind of curious right now, in the more typical situation today, when you have a patient getting neoadjuvant therapy that includes pertuzumab, how do you approach the issue of whether to use the pertuzumab post-op in situation A, like her, where she had a lot of disease, situation B, with a PathCR?
You know, for the longest time before the AFFINITY trial results, we were not able to use pertuzumab in the adjuvant setting, but still able to use it in the neoadjuvant setting. So a lot of these people were being treated with pertuzumab upfront and not receiving pertuzumab later, and many of them actually did well. We know based on all the trials done up to now that single agent HER2 targeted treatments work well just for a small subset of patients. Like the secret sauce really seems to be in combining chemotherapy with the HER2 targeted treatment. So the brunt of the addition of pertuzumab benefit is probably coming when that is combined with trastuzumab and the chemotherapy upfront, and possibly not as much as the quote-unquote maintenance that is given once patients complete their chemotherapy. So for somebody who achieves a pathologic complete CR, I don't feel so strongly about continuing pertuzumab at that point, because we know that by having achieved a pathologic complete response, the outcome of that patient is going to be good, and maybe they'll do just fine with trastuzumab alone. Whereas somebody who has residual disease, who still is at high risk of having a recurrence, you'd want to spruce up that maintenance treatment as much as possible, although I'd argue that patient's probably going to do poorly anyway because they've already been exposed to trastuzumab pertuzumab before their surgery, so they may not do well regardless of that. But typically, my algorithm is I discuss continuing the pertuzumab even for patients of pathologic complete response, just because if it worked before, like maybe we'll be doing a better job, but I don't feel strongly about continuing. So I give them the option of continuing or not based on tolerance. And I'll say it's usually a 50-50. But for patients that have residual disease, I do continue pertuzumab for the full year duration.
So the other question I wanted to ask you, relating again back to her case, is unfortunately she did develop metastatic disease. Looks like she did well with a sort of Cleopatra type approach and then ended up going on T-DM1, so pretty typical course for people to take. But the one thing I wanted to ask you about, and I don't know if you even thought about it in her case or whether you ever even do it, is, you know, she had ER positive disease. And we do have the data that just got published in the JCO in the PERTAIN trial that looked at the strategy of endocrine therapy plus HER therapy, pertuzumab and trastuzumab without chemo. And I'm curious whether you ever utilized that strategy. Did you consider, for example, in HER?
So in her, I didn't because she had a lot of visceral disease at that point and was somewhat symptomatic when she presented. So she would not have been a typical patient where I would have considered that. But for people that have oligometastatic disease, very asymptomatic ER-positive disease, and very strong expression of HER2, I potentially could discuss that as management. I feel a little uneasy about withholding a treatment such as Cleopatra-like treatment just because of the survival advantage we see with that. So I think until we see more data as far as is the survival advantage maintained when you withhold the chemo as first line? So I think there's a place in the sun for a chemo-less regimen, but I don't think it's for everybody. I would be more tempted to consider it in an elderly patient with comorbidities and somebody who has oligometastatic disease, possibly confined to the bone, and I would be more tempted to do that. But for the majority of people, I'd probably just use a regimen with a taxane, trastuzumab, and pertuzumab first line just because of the survival advantage with that.